What I'm going to talk about is a joint work of Tom Coates and myself. It is not entirely new work. The details, they're not fully published yet, but you can find the details in Tom's thesis, which is available on the internet, and it's kind of a year and a half old, and I had some chances to talk about the subject several times, never quite successfully, so I'm trying again to explain this theory. I think that it kind of, it has what mathematics... No, there is no grenade. But it does contain, so the theory does contain what mathematics usually contains, some element of some beautiful formula and also a mystery attached to it. So therefore, I just hope to convey this idea. So the in general words, the kind of the plan can be explained very easily. Well, we deal with Gromov-Witten invariants in terms of cohomology theory as intersection indices, but we could thus extraordinary cohomology theory, so we could generalize them, I'm going to say, to K theory, or even more generally to complex Kabordian theory, which is the most general extraordinary cohomology theory where complex vector bundles are orientable. And therefore the plan kind of to define Gromov-Witten invariants with values in complex Kabordian, and then maybe compute them in terms of cohomological Gromov-Witten invariants, which would be the meaning of quantum Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem. By the way, well, actually, it's not the way we arrived at the theory I'm going to talk about, but if you go back to Kantsevich's paper about general zero Gromov-Witten invariants and Torii actions, kind of the first paper on the subject, then there is a remark there which I didn't understand at the time, so that he says that Gromov-Witten invariants can be defined with values in Kabordians because moduli spaces of stable maps come naturally equipped with virtual tangent bundles. Well, probably some of you understand what this means. If not, then in a few minutes we'll have to figure out what he meant by this. So that in some sense this proposal kind of was more or less obvious from the very beginning of the theory. Well, anyway, what is complex Kabordian theory? You know very well what is Borgeson theory. So if there is some space, topological space B, then U sub N of B, it consists of, it's a group consisting of the following objects. If there is some manifold Z and it's mapped to B, then it is a Borgeson class. You need Z to be equipped with stably almost complex structure, which means that the direct sum of tangent bundle with a trivial bundle should be equipped with a complex structure. And of course, you mod out by maps of Borgesons to B, well, the equivalence relations that you know very well. Again, there should be some stable, almost complex structure on everything here in compatible way. So this is the Borgeson group. Well, if B itself is, if B is an itself in a manifold equipped with a stably almost complex structure, then there is a sort of Poincaré isomorphism of this with dimension B minus N Kobordism group. It's actually the meaning of Pantryagin-Thom construction. What's a Kobordism element? It abstractly is defined by homotopy class of map from B to some Thom spaces, and but the construction is that you take, if it's a manifold, you bring the map to general position to the zero section. So it's Thom space, it's a Thom space of the universal UN U something bundle, and so you take a zero section and pull it back, and you get some submanifold sitting in the suspension of B actually, and then you forget anything except the projection of it to B, and you have a Borgeson class. Therefore, this and goes both ways. So this is, you know, this classical construction using transversality theorem that its meaning actually is Poincaré isomorphism in Kabordian theory. Well, in particular, if we take B to be the point, so therefore the ring of Kabordian of the point is at least over Q. I will deal with everything over Q. So I think that everything is standard with Q is known to be, and it's essentially follows from Tom's computation. It's a polynomial algebra in complex projective spaces. So the therefore, if B is the point, so just absolute Bordesian classes are the basis over Q. Just products of complex projective spaces, but what I said, so there is the actually this is a description in terms of Bordism, not co-Bordism. Therefore, the degree of CPN is what the dimension of the point, which is zero minus the dimension of CPN. Therefore, it's you get degrees minus two, minus four, minus six, etc. So it's a polynomial ring with generators of these degrees. Well, I'm afraid that this is the end of the kind of elementary Bordesian theory. So the more advanced subject is the following. One can define characteristic classes of vector complex vector bundles with values in Bordesians. By splitting principle, it suffices to do this for universal line bundles. Therefore, if we have CP infinity, O of 1, so there is, well, I will probably denote this bundle L at some point, but therefore this is a universal S1 or U1 bundle. Its Bordesian valued Kirchhoff class is supposed to be sitting in the second co-Bordesian group of CP infinity, and well, it's what you really think it is. So consider a hyperplane section here, CP infinity minus one. Of course, infinity means a very large finite number here, so there is some limiting procedure here. But so the CP infinity, it's not fundamental, but the Bordesian class of hyperplane section in CP infinity is Poincaré dual, so therefore Poincaré dual in that sense of this is by definition the first chain Bordesian values first chain class of this universal line bundle. Well, this is a little bit less elementary part of the theory because it's immediately related to formal group, the role of the formal groups in Bordesian theory, namely there is a tensor product operation of vector bundles, which means that if you have two universal bundles with say this Bordesian Chern classes V and W and you form the tensor product, then this bundle can be induced from the universal bundle by some map, and therefore the first Chern class of this bundle should be computable somehow. And actually, these guys generate the Bordesian rings. The hyperplane class generates Bordesian rings of CP infinity. Therefore, it should be some function of V and W. Therefore, there is some. And in the first approximation, it is V plus W, but actually it's not. There is an infinite series there. And one of the properties of this series is that it defines a formal group law on the line with coordinates with one variable, say U. And the reason for that is just because the tensor product of, if you consider three line bundles, there is a tensor product of three of them, and it's associative. So associativity and invertibility of line bundles implies that it's a formal group law. Okay, so the next piece of the general equation so far. The general next piece of the general theory is the Chern character. So in fact, you can think of Bordesians of a space in cosmological terms, because there is such a, it's called Chern-Dalt character. It's a multiplicative homomorphism, natural multiplicative homomorphism from Bordesian theory to cohomology theory. Actually, to cohomology of B with coefficients in Bordesian of the point. Yeah, so therefore you can think of algorithm theory as just cohomology with such with these coefficients defined over Q. And here I'm denoting it by capital CH to emphasize it's different from the Chern character in K theory that you know. According to some machinery or matter-of-fact topology, really in order to define, to construct it, what you need to know, the main thing that you need to know is just what to do with this first Chern, the universal first Chern class, this particular class. Let me denote it somehow. I will denote it. Yeah, it is U. Okay. I denoted it U here. Okay, so with this class U of this space, therefore, there is, so in if B is CP infinity, there is a Mordian class U which, when expressed in cohomological terms, should be an element of degree 2 in this graded ring, again, B is CP infinity, let me denote Z, the cohomological first Chern class of the universal line bundle, then it should be, well, in the first approximation it is Z, but then it should be plus alpha 1 Z squared plus alpha 2 Z cubed, etc. It's going to be some series in Z with coefficients which are elements of this coefficient ring. So it should be an element of this form. Right? Now it asks me what are these alphas. The answer can be given, but it's usually given in the inverse series is easy to describe geometrically. This is something like Mishenko formula, which says that Z is a function of U. If you invert the series, is U plus CP 1 over 2 U squared plus CP 2 over 3 U cubed, etc. So the coefficients are 1 over n. For obvious reasons, it's called the logarithm of the formal group. So one of the reasons just resembles the logarithmic series. More precisely, if you specialize Cobordian theory to K theory, which means that you replace these spaces by their arithmetical genus, by the number, which is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, then you get indeed the logarithmic series. Most precisely, you get logarithm of 1 of 1 minus u, which means that u is 1 minus e to minus z. And you can recognize here the kind of the K-theoretic, well, the Chern character of the K-theoretic Euler class. Right, it's a kind of Chern character of line bundle minus schedule complex of the universal line bundle is Chern character. U is by division is that Cobordian it's a Cobordian class of CP infinity minus 1 and CP infinity, so it's a first Chern class, universal first Chern class in the sense of Cobordian theory. Z is a similar class in cohomology theory, if B is CP infinity, Z generates this cohomology multiplicatively over coefficient ring of the theory, right? And U generates a Cobordian ring also over coefficient ring of the theory. And if there is the Chern those characters should act on U and should produce some element in cohomology. So I'm interpreting class here in these terms. And it should have this form where alphas are some elements of the coefficient. Huh? What? U lives in Cobordian. Okay, yeah, I think I will schematically now omit this. I think that U is identified with the series, right? Right. And that's the second meaning. So the first one is just it resembles the logarithmic series. And if you want to know what alphas are, you can recompute by inverting the series what they are in terms of CPNs. But anyway, this is just some set of another set of generators of this ring. In some sense, they're just arbitrary coefficients. Doesn't matter what they are. Just if you forget about geometric meaning of Cobordianism as something related to spaces, it's just some series of arbitrary coefficients. And the second meaning is the following: that of course, the Chern class, the cohomological first Chern class, behaves additively with respect to the tensor product. And really, the role of this series it trivializes this this multiplication, this addition law. Therefore, what really that okay, so the this f of v of x, where v of x means v of x means this formula where u replaced with v and z with x. U of x, u of y is equal to u of x plus y. So, therefore, in other words, in order to write down this formula, what you need to do, you need to write this series of x plus y and then express it in terms of u of x and u of y. That's what it is. So, therefore, in fact, of course, this group law on the line is just addition of numbers, but written in a weird coordinate defined by this diffeomorphism of the line. Okay, in that sense, this is logarithm of the group, of the formal group. Well, anyway, because there is such a multiplicative character from one cohomology theory to another, it means that there is a corresponding formal Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem, namely, down here. Namely, suppose that we have some space, well, some manifold, stably almost complex manifold B, and it's mapped to a point, then there should be a direct image operation of this way, which it's clear what it is. If there is some in terms of Poincaré dual terms, if there is a Bordism class representing some element here, then you just forget, you compose the maps, just consider just the absolute class of Z in Thom's ring of Bordism, and that's what push forward is. But you should be able, by virtue of this homomorphism, to compute the answer in cohomological terms. Therefore, well, if this is phi and phi star of, so if there is some element A here, and phi star of A, the construction that I just described, just forgetting B in this this map, remembering Z. Then, at the same time, and this is an element of the coefficient ring of the Hilbertian theory, it should be at the same time computable as integral over the manifold B. Well, there is a general abstract form, so there should be the Chern character of A, defined in principle by starting with this construction and generalizing to all manifolds and all spaces and all Hilbertian classes, times the tod of the tangent bundle of B, which, by the way, know that those who were here on Tuesday, I was using once the notation for the tod class, but I was using the small letter T there, because this tod class is not the tod class in K-theory that you know. It's a generalization in Hilbertian theory. Well, what's tod class in general? Well, it's a multiplicative class of vector bundles, which is suffices to define it for a universal line bundle. And, of course, as always, it is the ratio of the cohomological and Hilbertian valued Euler classes of the line bundle. Is just a general rule. Therefore, this is the tod of L, of the universal line bundle. But at the same time, it is that the universality, universal role of Hilbertian theory with respect to complex vector bundles, it is a cohomological characteristic class of vector bundles, right? So it's multiplicative, so it should. You can write the series as in this way, where Fk has some coefficients. Which means that in general, it is therefore this top class of bundle is E to the sum of Sk, Chern k. Now it's usual components of the Chern character of the bundle E with some coefficients. The coefficients are computable from just this expansion of series. What are Sk here? Well, again, Sk, you can compute them in terms of CPNs, but bottom line that there just yet another set of generators, case here from 1 to infinity, all of the coefficient rings. So you can forget a lot of generators, just think that these are arbitrary parameters. So this Sk, so this is Q, S1, S2, etc. So the arbitrary coefficients. Therefore, this is a general multiplicative characteristic loss of complex reactor bundles. Okay. So, therefore, this already tells us, maybe it's enough of general Kolmogorov theory, this tells us what to do if we want to generalize Gromov-Witten theory to take values in Kolmogorovs. So, namely, well, what are Gromov-Witten theories usually? So we have some target space, Keller, almost Keller, target space X. Consider moduli spaces of stable maps or of certain genus and the number of mark points, and again the degree is kind of, I'm summing over degrees here in this notation. And yes, as Maxim Kantsevich wrote correctly, so the spaces come equipped with virtual tangent bundles, which I will denote this way, TGM, maybe X should be there if I want to emphasize the target. So there are virtual tangent spaces to this moduli space. There is some deformation theory behind, so that's why they're there. And therefore, if I... okay, so what are Gromov-Witten invariants in general? So we take some classes, say classes AI from this time from Kolmogorov ring of the target instead of cohomology. And well, if you want gravitational descendants, it means that well, over the spaces there are these line bundles, LIs, universal cotangent line bundles corresponding to mark points, I varies from 1 to n. And they have, well, usually we use in intersection theory in these spaces, we use psi I's, which are cohomological Hertzian classes of those, but we can use a Kolmogorov value first chain classes this time, right? And so therefore we can, what we want is to define correlators like A1, maybe I denote this capital psi I, the first chain class with values in Kolmogorov of these line bundles. So psi 1 to K1, AN psi N to K, and that's what we would like to defined by doing some kind of intersection theory with values in Kolmogorov on this space. And there is a problem here. In fact, these are, even in the virtual sense, they are not manifolds, they are orbifolds. And so Kolmogorov theory for orbifolds is at least as subtle as the K theory would be, actually more subtle. And so there might be even some technical problem in defining honestly this invariant, but at least what we can do, we can mimic just what thinking of Kolmogorov theory can do equivalent thing, we can express the answer in terms of cohomology theory by using formally this Chern Dold character. Therefore, we can define it as an integral of over Mg and virtual fundamental class, and take what? Take the product of Chern Dold characters of AIs on the target space, their evaluation at mark points pull back to, well, use the corresponding cohomology classes here, or this psi i's, the Chern-Dold character is this u of little psi i's of the classes, sort of this universal series u of z instead of z as substituting this cohomological psi class. And according to this formula, what I should do, I should, therefore, this would be some cohomological intersection Gromov-Witten invariants, and here I should add, therefore, this third class of the tangent bundle of the moduli space, and that's where I need this virtual tangent bundle. But what it is therefore, it is E to the sum of Sk, Chern K of this virtual tangent bundle TGM. Period. Then, therefore, then the next question would be, okay, can we compute it in terms of cohomological Gromov-Witten invariants, which means that, well, there is sort of new ingredient, the only new ingredient compared to the ordinary homology theory is that we now bring into intersection theory new classes, namely characteristic classes of this virtual tangent bundles. In fact, as I said, this plan is not the way we arrived at this problem. It was quite the opposite. So we were thinking a little bit of case theory and quantum case theory, but essentially at some point what we wanted to do with Tom is just really to do something familiar, to bring exactly what's written here, just to consider usual Gromovitz invariants, but bring in this Chern classes of the virtual tangent bundles as new ingredients for the intersection theory. And then just try to see if they're new or not, or if they're not, then compute them in terms of ordinary Gromovitz invariants. So for this, therefore, we need to, in order to do that, we need to understand this tangent spaces, the tangent bundles, and it's sort of immediate to sort of make progress in this direction is very easy. So, therefore, what are these virtual tangent bundles? So therefore, we're talking about modular space of stable maps to some target space from many surfaces, and talking about deformation theory, so how to describe deformations of such maps. And of course, there's some obvious piece of this is when you fix a complex structure on the Riemannian, so fixed complex structure on the Riemannian surface, and consider just variations of the maps, and there is Cash-Riemann operator, so therefore there is a tangent bundle on the target. You pull it back to the curve, so variations of the map are kind of vector fields along the map, and there is a Cash-Riemann operator on sections of that bundle, and so the index of that Cash-Riemann operator is this part of this virtual tangent bundle. There is the index of the D-bar operator on kind of G, there is a map of sigma to X, F, then there is F star Tx pulled back, so therefore there is corresponding Cash-Riemann operator. It's a familiar thing, so, it's not the end, there is something else there, but kind of the good news about this part is the following. So it is, so we already considered it on Tuesday, or Jim considered it yesterday. So it is so what we are doing, therefore, we are taking a curve sigma restricting tangent bundle, taking global sections, and maybe subtracting H1 if it is there. So it is therefore, if this were everything, so if you replace T by this part, it means that we're considering just twisted Gromovitz invariants twisted by this bundle E, which is happens to be the tangent bundle to the target. So it's exactly, therefore, this what I denoting E, G, N, where E is this tangent bundle. So it's therefore the corresponding invariants are just Gromovitz invariants twisted by characteristic classes of this index bundle for which is constructed just from a particular bundle on the target. But the particular bundle in this case is a tangent bundle to X. So therefore, in principle, we know how to express this, and that was the subject of I talk on Tuesday. It is the content of the quantum Riemann-Roch theorem. It's how to express characteristic classes of these bundles in terms of simpler Gromovitz invariants. And so the point is that this MG and X, you can consider the universal curve over it, MG n plus 1 bar, and the evaluation map to the target. So really what's happening here, there is this bundle, this time E equal to Tx, pull back here and push forward here. That was this E, G, and bundle E here. But so in order to compute characteristic classes of this bundle, you can use Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch theorem on for this bundle over this vibration, and reduce everything to computation upstairs in terms of simpler. So the point is, therefore, this bundle is a push forward of something simpler along this universal curve, and therefore the Gratian decremer rock theorem allows us to express what we want in terms of simple Gromov-Witt invariants. Yeah, so therefore, and the answer, the quantum Riemann rock theorem would describe the answer. There was some long formula. We'll come to that again today, but in principle, therefore, we know what to do with this part. Moreover, it's not only we know what to do, but we kind of spoiled with success with this kind of formulas, quantum Riemann-Roch formulas and other results. Namely, we knew kind of a priori that what is supposed to happen in general is something like that. So there is some formalism that I described on Tuesday, but I will repeat it today, which allows to handle all in a nice combinatorial way all the formulas that come out of such Gratian decremer Riemann rock computations or many other things. Namely, to remind you, we would start with vector space H, which is a cohomology of the target space. Consider space of Lorentz series in one indeterminate, which in the determinate is in fact this this universal cohomological first chunk class. Introduce appropriate symplectic structure there. Then consider the corresponding Fock space as the place where generating functions for Gromov-Witt invariant should lie. There are many formulas involving this formalism in expressing various facts in Gromov-Witt in theory, which all have the following nature. So there is actually the symmetry group of this datum, in particular this loop space with vector coefficients, is acted upon by a loop group. So there is the loop group of GLH, and some part of it preserves the symplectic structure. There is this loop group acting there, and somehow all the formulas that we knew in many situations would involve just, would relate to different kinds of invariants by some transformations that come from this loop group as some symplectic transformation defined by a group element quantized and acting appropriately on the Fock space. So therefore, what we expect is therefore that something like that should happen here. So there is a formalism which handles successfully all the problems of this kind, and it should work here too. I think you will hear today more about this formalism and this loop group, because it's there is a conjecture that's acting on by symmetries on Gromov-Witt in theory, so it's preserved the axioms of Huygens Gromov-Witt in theory, and so therefore, it's really, there is some reason why the elements of this group always occur in various meaningful formulas in Gromov-Witt in theory. Well, anyway, so that was the plan. But then, if you look at what is here, then it kind of sort of doesn't fit our expectations. So first of all, what is left here? So there is a variation of complex structures on the Riemannian surface itself, right? So therefore, it is essentially a tangent space to the Riemann-Prandtl spaces. Right, variations of complex structure. First approximation, it is the same as taking quadratic differentials on the Riemannian surface. So it's not exactly true, because the surface could be singular, etc. But first approximation is quadratic differentials. Quadratic differentials, it means that, again, it is computable in terms of push forward of something here to here. And maybe I can even say what. So if there is, there is this one bundle L I corresponding to the last mark point that we're forgetting here. And in fact, if you take one, so the trivial one-dimensional bundle minus the universal cotangent line in the point that you forget here, which is more or less a tangent bundle, so inverse of it, more or less tangent bundle to the curve, and push it forward, then you get the dual space to quadratic differentials. And so therefore, really, the game is this way. If you subtract C, and I think that so therefore this part is a push forward, so you can see the push forward of this, and then push forward of that, then they together cover most of what you need here. And namely, what this gives you, it's not the whole tangent bundle, but the logarithmic tangent bundle of the Delimanprandtl spaces, not Delimanprandtl, of this moduli spaces. I didn't finish the bread, but what so there is So there is something left after you add this part, and it's the following thing. So this part together, it is not the tangent bundle of the modulus testableness, but it is a logarithmic one. It means that it corresponds to the sheaf of section, sheaf of vector fields, which are tangent to the compactifying divisor there. So it's a logarithmic tangent bundle. So therefore, what is left here is actually concentrated on that compactifying divisor, which corresponds to reducible curves. And again, it's a good news because it means that you can kind of inductively, you can by gluing, therefore, express that thing in terms of simpler moduli spaces with lower genus or number of mark points, and therefore, again, recursively can compute whatever you want in terms of ordinary Gromov-Witten invariants. Therefore, once again, there is kind of two applications of Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch. So in principle, if you want to make sure that we can compute this new Gromov-Witten invariants in terms of old ones, then it seems that yes, we can do that because we can do using Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch something here, something else here, and what is left is gives us some recursion to lower genus, etc. So it's good news. We can, in principle, do that. But then you're thinking of the actual formula, what is the answer? And there is a puzzle here, because we know this part is handled well by the formalism and machinery of quantum Riemann-Roch. And here it's easy to compute what happens, but it looks different. It has nothing to do with the loop group, really. It looks unfamiliar to us. And even worse here. So this gluing, you can imagine what it means. So if you kind of you try to compute in terms of generating functions, what it means, some quadratic differential operator. So it looks like quantization of some quadratic Hamiltonian, maybe, but it doesn't come from, if you look at it, it doesn't come from loop group. It really has nothing to do with the formalism that we knew very well. And so that was the puzzle of how to, it looks terrible recursion, so there's awful relations which we don't know how to understand the combinatorial nature of those. And it turns out that in order to understand this, it is necessary to interpret this originally cohomological equation as the right-hand side of this formula. Therefore, if we understand that the question we're asking is just the right-hand side of something that belongs to Kobordism theory, then somehow it dictates some change in the formalism, the generalization from cohomology to Kobordism theory. And somehow this, just the change of the generalization of the formalism, just changing setup of cohomology to Kobordism theory, automatically handles whatever is here, whatever comes from moduli of Riemannian surfaces themselves. And so that's actually a mystery. So therefore, I will explain now what is the generalization of the generalized formalism. But my point is that it is some purely combinatorial construction dealing with, you know, some formal series, spaces of some formal series in some variables, which is kind of motivated by the concept of the formal group on the line. And somehow, nevertheless, this formalism knows everything there is to know in Gromov-Witten theory about moduli of Riemannian surfaces. Not moduli of maps. Maps, it's a different thing, but variations of complex structures on surfaces. And therefore, somehow, there is this mysterious marriage between, between, you know, formal groups or whatever combinatorics come from there and moduli of Riemannian surfaces, which might not look so mysterious if you just think of in terms of diffeomorphism groups of on the line, but anyway, so we don't know what is why it happens and what is the significance of this relationship, but that's what's suggested by the result we see. Okay, so now let me describe what is the formalism and what is the eventual final formulation of the relationship between Kobordian valued and cohomological valued Gromov-Witten invariants. In cohomology theory, for those who work here on Tuesday, maybe they've seen this formulas, but I'm repeating. So everything is formally dependent. So in cohomology theory, you start with vector space H, which is the cohomology of the target space. And of course, its counterpart in Kobordism theory, we take U to be the Kobordism space of X, in tensor. everything is over Q here. So there is an intersection pairing here. It's a part of the datum, and there is a coordinate valued intersection here as well. So let me write it this way: A, B, U. Well, there are what is this? So the okay, I can think of pi as a map from X to the point. Then it is pi star of A cross B. This is cross B over the diagonal. Well, anyway, the meaning is the following: you have two Borgesen classes, two submanifolds in X. You intersect them in general position, and the absolute Borgesen class of the intersection is the intersection index with values in Kabordian. Means that I'm two maps of two manifolds to X. There is Cartesian product of maps to X cross X. There is an inverse image of the diagonal. It's what is there. So and pi star, it means that it just that's a product iteration in Kabordian, and then I just evaluate, take push forward to the pointer. Just remember the absolute Borgesen class of the main. Anyway, there is some intersection pairing, as always. So next, here I would introduce the space of Lorentz series with vector coefficients in H with an indeterminate 1 over z. And here, naturally, we introduce this space of Lorentz series with coefficients in u respect to the variable u. It's, again, u is the Chern-Kabordian valued, the universal search Chern class of line bundles in Kabordian series. Z is has the same meaning as homology series. So there is so this we're going to compare the two series. Therefore, there is we need to use a Chern character, and so therefore there is a quantum Chern character which is a map from here to here, and the way it acts. So if there is a Lorentz series with coefficients in Kabordian X, then it goes to. It's clear what should happen here. So I should replace Fk by the Chern-Dolz character of Fk to get a cohomology class. Actually, it will be not to this space, but tensor product with the coefficient ring of the Kabordian series. Or actually, even a bit worse, I need to complete. So this ring of polynomials in CP1, CP2, I have to make it formal series at some point. So there are some little details here, but let's ignore them. So therefore, the coefficients, just I acted just to get coefficients in cohomology with this coefficient, then u, of course, is replaced by u of z, by that series, how u is expressed in terms of z, that universal formula. There's a sum over k. And there is one more detail. I want to. There's some mismatch between the inner product here. If I express in cohomological terms, it means that integral over x of AB times the Todd class of the tangent bundle of x. And therefore, it differs from what is here under this identification. And to match them, I will multiply by the square root of the Todd of Tx. Means that I kind of split this into two parts, and then therefore this operation coefficient wise preserves therefore the respects the inner product in the space. Okay. The next thing is a symplectic structure. So as I said, so my plan is therefore to construct some Fock space, therefore starting with symplectic space, and make generating function for Gromit invariant sitting in the Fock space, and then write down some formulas in terms of some transformations on this space. So using quantum mechanical formalism. And so, the symplectic. Actually, what I want is that this operation. What was the symplectic structure here in cohomology theory? It was the following: there are two Lorentz series, F. And g in the variable z, then I would write f of minus z, g of z, pair the coefficient using the Poincaré pairing, and then compute the residue. And this would be my, by definition, my symplectic form of the pair of Lorentz series. I can write a similar formula here, but similar, well, what's similar? So really what I want is that this quantum Chern character, I want it to be symplectomorphic, I identify the space symplectically. Therefore, I really, in some sense, I don't want to change anything. I'm writing the same thing. So far, I'm writing the same thing in different notation. And so, therefore, what should I do there? I should write, therefore, this coordinate valued symplectic form of F, G, these are Lorentz series in U, would be 1 over 2 pi I, residue. There is this coordinate valued pairing of the coefficients. Now, what should I do here? So, what should be here, obviously, if I don't want to change anything, is F of U star, where U star is the inversion iteration of the formal group. So, because really it means that U star of Z is U of minus Z. So, the inversion operation in cohomology, Z goes to minus Z. And after this, diffeomorphism is, it is this operation, so therefore I should take U of minus Z and express it as some function of Z. So that's, therefore this is, this what should be here. So U star of U should be here. But therefore it exactly means that after the Chern character I'm not changing anything, because expressed in terms of Z just means changing the sign of Z like here. But also I should write some measure here, and the measure is dz. But dz, you see that now there is a nice formula. This Mishenko formula says that dz actually is the sum to u to k cp k du. K is from 0 to infinity. So this is the differentiate, the series of this one. So there is, therefore, a nice formula is a sum CPK can take out of the integral, but therefore this time, if you forget about cohomology theory, the formula for the symplectic form looks more complicated and more interesting, in a sense, yeah, but it looks natural still, right? This sum, yeah. Now, the pairing is this one, defined naturally, is it has this form. This identification is defined in such a way that it actually agrees with this one. So that's why, therefore, this Chern, quantum Chern character will identify the spaces symplectically with this formula. Therefore, so far I was therefore introducing the formalism which would look natural in, on the left-hand side, but at the same time would not be new. Compared to right-hand side, would be exactly the same thing, right there. The next thing that I need to do is, okay, so we have some generating functions for Gromovitz invariants, right? Say, D in cohomology theory, which is, it's a total descended potential of the target space X, which by definition has the form of its exponential series. There is a genus expansion, H to G minus 1, then generating functions for genus G, Gromovitz invariants of the target space, including gravitational descendants. And they are, doesn't matter if you know of them or not, they're just some formal series whose coefficients are the intersection indices that I was mentioning before. In any way, they, if you think what are they as functions, they are defined as formal functions of a sequence of variables which are vector variables with values in H in cohomology. Therefore, so T, K are elements in H. It is a function on therefore there is my symplectic space H, space of Lorentz series, and there is a polynomial part of it which I call H plus. It's polynomials in Z, and This is some formal function on this space, on H plus. And there is a similar function in cobordism theory, which again has the same structure, because everything there is a sum here over general theory. So cobordism is a version of it, and there are no, so how should you know them? Oh, some other T's, okay. T0, T1, etc. And similarly, therefore, I should think of this is space U, and there is subspace U plus, which is polynomials in U. Right, and that's what happens here. So really, the ingredient of intersection theory, I take the cobordism classes of the target space and multiply them by first-chain class power, the first-chain classes of universal cotangent lines. That's why this expression occurs. So, and this is a function on this space. So there are now two elements in the formalism. So one of them is that's called the dilaton shift. This is a dilaton shift, which in cohomology theory was the following. Really, I consider this function not as just a function, a formal function on the space defined in the neighborhood of the origin, but I shift it to the point minus 1, z. So therefore, I'm using the vector 1 in the cohomology to shift the origin in one of the variables. Therefore, if I'm thinking of some kind of Darboux coordinates on this space, and there are, well, Q0, Q1, ZQ2, Z square are notations for elements in this space. So these are my Darboux, kind of vector Darboux coordinates. Then it means that Q0 is T0, but Q1 is T1 minus 1, and the others are the same as QK. Therefore, I'm shifting in this T1 by 1. And for some reason, it is, which I'm not going to explain now, it is an important part of the formalism. It makes all formulas look simpler and more natural, more homogeneous, etc. So, therefore, I'm interpreting this as a function on this formal function of this of the variables Q, which shifts its origin, formal function near point minus 1z. So what should happen on this side? Well, it turns out that, and this is the first difference, really. So far, we were, this quantum Cherenkov, we really identified the objects, but now there is some difference. It should be, so this minus z, it's inversion in the formal group. Right? And that's what I should do here. Therefore, Q, this dilaton shift Q of U should be related to T of U in this way, plus U star of U. And here, therefore, this Q of Z is T of Z minus 1 times Z. So, therefore, if you start comparing them, so there is a serious discrepancy between the, translate this to that language, and there is a discrepancy. This U of minus Z plus minus Z. There's a mismatch there. But now it's not the end yet, because what I wanted to have elements in the Fock space, and so far I just described functions on this space. And, you know, it's not enough to, half of the, so there are functions of half of the variables, but it's not enough to say that these are elements of the Fock space. The Fock space is a representation of the Heisenberg group. Or Heisenberg-Lie algebra of the symplectic space. And therefore, what I need to do, I need to extend the functions to the whole symplectic space in a constant way, along with that I need polarization. So here we do the following. We consider H minus, which is the polar part of our own series. There will be two Lagrangian subspaces with respect to my symplectic structure, and we would have, we would think therefore of this as T star of H plus, and therefore extend my function by as a constant along these fibers, and this way make it a function of symplectic space with sort of natural action of the Heisenberg the algebra there, and therefore it's a legitimate element of the Fock space. Now you start moving here, and here there is some news. So the natural thing to take is this U minus. You take it, therefore, again, polar part of Lorentz series, and then you realize that with this symplectic structure, as we introduced, there's absolutely no reason why this should be in a Lagrangian subspace. So therefore, you cannot do that. So you need some Lagrangian subspace, and you don't know what it is. Therefore, at this point, you have to rethink sort of more conceptually what is your choice of polarization? Why are we doing this? Why are we taking this polarization? Why there are Lagrangian subspaces? And the answer is given by the following formula. And so far, therefore, everything was on the side of formal group theory was built up of natural objects there, this inversion in the group. But now there is some, and even the symplectic structure was built of a Mischenko formula. And now there is some kind of new element there. Namely, there is such a, let's write down such a residue. It can be computed depending on, so therefore it's a residue in Z, and therefore there is first order pole. This function, first approximation, is just Z minus X minus Z minus Y. There are poles at Z equal X and Z equal to minus Y, and depending on what happens, if both poles are outside or both are inside, as one can compute, you get zero residue. And if one of them, so if if X is inside, you get 1 over U minus X minus Y, and if the other way around, get minus that. Well, there is such a nice and simple residue formula. It turns out that it is kind of responsible for kind of Darboux coordinates in that space and for polarization. So, namely, I can take this 1 over U minus X minus Y and expand it. So, suppose that I take that space U plus and I take any basis UK of Z, K is equal to 0, 1, etc., some topological basis there. For instance, I can take Z to K or U to K, it doesn't matter what, some base in the space of polynomials. Then I can expand this for, say, in the function UK of X, for X sort of less than Y, with some coefficients which are Lorentz series in Y. For example, if we take just minus 1 divided by minus X minus Y, then it is a sum, under this restriction, the sum of geometrical sequences witness X to K divided by minus Y to K plus 1. Right? And actually, this whole thing is just this expression times something analytic, and so you just multiply by it, so you can get this expression with respect to X to K. Well, then the statement is the following. So, when you have this, consider these functions, therefore VK of Z, which are read of these formulas, then this, so this is a half of a Darboux basis by definition. You take in some Lagrangian subspace, takes, so U plus is Lagrangian, so you take some basis there. Then these things are automatically just a completion of the whole thing. It's a dual Darboux basis, so the whole thing is a Darboux basis in this space. So, I don't know, it's a simple consequence. For instance, the fact that these functions, okay, maybe I'll do this computation if you give me a minute. For instance, I want to show that VK and VL are scalar orthogonal. But so it means that I should compute the residue of. So what I'm doing really, I want to show that it's equal to zero. So what I'm doing, I'm writing. One over the generating function for what?
Generating function for the vector times the dual vector is 1 over x plus y.
No.
It's the cohomology computation.
It's cohomology, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then you just pull it, since your integral, just pull back of that.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not that. That's what I'm saying.
Is.
No, the spaces are. No, this is different. This is. This. See, this. These are spaces of pullback by what?
By your integral on the coordinate side. You change your variable from that same integral on the cohomology.
Yeah, but the space. So in one case, we have space spanned by these monomials.
Yes.
And it's not pullback of that. Pullback of that space. No, okay.
Okay.
It's not that. It's not it. It's not it. So there is really this multiplication brings the deformation. This is not the same the same subspace. So that's the whole point. So
this is the reproducing kernel for the inner product. And it's just a pullback, right? What you read is the reproducing kernel for the inner product.
I don't know, I don't see it this way, so maybe you're right, but okay, so there is, what's going on there is, as much as I'm concerned, so there is this the following thing. So this function is written as sum of uk of x, vk of z, the other one, the sum, the other is the sum uk, ul of y, maybe minus z here, ul of y, vl of z. So this residue, when it's computed, therefore, it gives me the sum of u k x v l y times omega v k v l. Therefore, on the other hand, I know that this is zero from this formula, which means that all these numbers are zero. So it's just something like that. That was the kind of computation you meant. Okay. Yeah. So. Therefore, what I'm doing now, therefore, I take u minus to be the subspace spanned by all these functions. And so what is important, therefore, if you apply this quantum Chern character, then you'll see that the image of that subspace here is not just, it's not H minus. It's H minus when, you know, there's, you can think of this picture or the image of it here as S parametric version of the cohomological picture, the parameters S's. And so the image of that space for S equal to zero, it is H minus, it's just cohomology theory, but then it varies, it depends on S. And therefore, when I lift the function was defined on this space to the entire space, make it an element of a Fock space using my polarization, really it depends. So the polarization varies with S, so it brings some extra dependence on S. Now I'd like to state the theorem. This quantum Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem, it says the following. So I take this generating function of Gromov-Witt invariance in coordinate theory, coordinate values one. I consider it as an element in the Fock space using my new version of the Dilaton shift and this new version of the polarization. Now, the quantum Chern character identifies the symplectic spaces, and therefore, by Stone von Neumann theorem, it identifies the Fock spaces as reducible representations of the Heisenberg the algebra projectively up to scalar. And if I understand in this sense the action of the quantum Chern character on this function, therefore it gives me at least up to a scalar, which I ignore now, gives me some element in the Fock space corresponding to this picture. So you can think of it, therefore, not, well, if you like, you can think of it as family depending on S, family of elements of the Fock space depending on S.
Of What do you think about this representation of loop groups having diffeomorphisms? It's really after diffeomorphisms in the picture, right? So is that really a representation of diffeomorphisms?
Diffeomorphism of what? It's linear. It's linear map. It's linear symbolic structure, linear unification. So it's really Heisenberg algebra, just translation here. It's really a representation. There is linear symplectic geometry, linear representation of symplectic group. So therefore it lives in the Fock space of cohomology theory and depends on S there. And the statement that it's related to, well, I can say it in two ways. I can say that it is, it gives me the Gromovitz invariance, but twisted ones, twisted by this bundle E, which is tangent X minus one-dimensional trivial bundle. So therefore, the result is, after that, we get twisted Gromovitz invariance twisted by this bundle, or more explicitly, if you use quantum Riemann-Roch theorem I stated last time, for those who were there, it means that it's usual Gromovitz invariance, untwisted ones. Zero means that, well, that S1, S2, etc. equals to zero. There was a delta tilde hat, so there is some operator here, which is root of E, root of Todd E, product M is from 1 to infinity, Todd of E tensor alpha minus M. L is the universal line bundle. E is this thing. And this expression should be processed through some asymptotical expansion tilde and some quantization formalism, and this belongs to the loop group, the way it acts on the Fock space. Therefore, well, this part is just from the previous talk, for those who were there. Therefore, what this formula tells us that, as I told you before, so the variations of the complex structure of the curve is what kind of sitting in this part of modification. It is just twisted Gromovitz invariance. It's handled somehow by transformations from the loop group. But whatever is left from moduli of Riemannian surfaces, whatever part of the tangent bundle to moduli space of stable maps comes from variations of complex structure on the Riemannian surfaces, is entirely taken care of by this formalism, by the change in the symplectic formalism. And so there are two changes. One of them is non-trivial Dilaton shift defined by inversion in the formal group, the polarization, which changes, in some sense, the Dilaton shift takes care about the logarithmic part of the tangent bundle, and the what is left from a moduli, of course, what is sitting on the divisor of compactifying divisor of singular curves. That I told you, it is some gluing, and therefore it corresponds to kind of second order differential operators acting on our generating functions, is what you can see. So when you change polarization in this way, so this subspace is preserved, but this is varying. It means that you are moving it by kind of p-square type quadratic Hamiltonian, and so the way how that change is introduced through this formula automatically takes care in the correct way about this phenomenon. So, and that's a mystery, so why? We don't know why it happens. It's 20 pages of, the proof consists of 20 pages of cancellations, just to compute left and right hand side using Grignard Riemann-Roch, and so everything cancels out, and you have no clue why it happens. Okay, thank you.